but it's easy to ignore a problem that you aren't actually faced with. For people of color across the country, racial profiling has unfortunately become their reality, and for some, it's their daily life.
When you get stopped for the 8th time, the 15th time, the 25th time, it isn't funny. And every parent's nightmare is that one of those will turn into mouthing off while black, because then anything can happen. I've been stopped in my own neighborhood multiple times. It's a gentrified neighborhood now. No reason given except to ask maybe if I was lost. Once I had just pulled up in front of my own house, told the officer, no, I wasn't lost. I've lived here since 1977. I had a gun pointed at me as I tried to find out how to comply with conflicting instructions given by a police officer while I was a passenger in a marked Channel 8 news van. The facts of a particular encounter may seem casual, but it's a cumulative effect of being asked where you're going, where you've been, who you are, over and over again that makes it tense, that and the fear. And as I've said before, many black men will tell you that their first thought when they see blue lights in the rearview mirror is, am I going to die today?
That was Lou Frederick. You heard his voice in the beginning of the story. Lou represents District 43 in the Oregon House of Representatives. Lou's experiences as a black man being consistently confronted by law enforcement pushed him to address racial profiling in the legal realm as the chief sponsor of House Bill 2002.
Strange fruit hanging.
House Bill 2002 is a piece of Oregon legislature that's working to eliminate racial profiling by law enforcement. But this bill isn't the first time the issue of police profiling has been addressed by the government. At the turn of the 21st century, there began to be a heightened public awareness of the need to end this discriminatory practice. This came after 2 decades of a culture of fear surrounding criminal activity, established by the war on drugs and skyrocketing numbers of incarcerated folks. So people started to take legal action. Lawmakers introduced the End Racial Profiling Act of 2001, which addressed a lot of the big concerns about racial profiling and identified ways to end the practice. Unfortunately, though, the bill lost momentum when the country directed its energy to what some consider to be a new problem, terrorism.
Then the sudden smell
of... After September 11th, the U.S. began to increase its security and target people that they deemed to be terrorists, which, of course, were people of color. New laws and policies were established to support security procedures that completely relied on racial profiling, and those are still in place today. In fact, up until the passage of House Bill 2002, Oregon was one of 27 states that didn't even prohibit racial profiling. That's more than half the country. And according to the national average, nearly a quarter of the people of color living in Oregon have been or will be racially profiled. But now, things may be starting to change. For Oregon, at least. On July 13th, House Bill 2002 became effective.
Scent of magnolia.
I wanted to figure out exactly what this bill was and what action it was going to take, so I spoke with Representative Lou Frederick, the chief sponsor of the bill. Lou, can you just tell me a little bit about House Bill 2002 and how it came to be?
Well, there are 3 basic parts to it. One is the identification, the definition of racial profiling is an important one because there were agencies that already had rules and regulations about it, but that was not universal in the state. And then it provides a procedure for people to send in complaints to an agency that is based at PSU and provides the money for that agency to collect that information and do some analysis to determine just what we're seeing regarding racial profiling in the state of Oregon. It was a very successful situation. I was very pleased with it.
To me, this bill sounded almost too good to be true. After years of state-sanctioned violence and police brutality against people of color, Oregon is finally trying to make a change. But this bill is still in the works, and there are a lot of parts that are still being considered and decided on. So what else can lawmakers do to keep this bill headed in the right direction? In 2004, Amnesty International published a report on racial profiling, and they included a list of things a racial profiling law has to have in order to be effective. And according to this list, House Bill 2002 is missing quite a few things. The first problem I found was with the definition of racial profiling.
So on the plus side, there's now a law in the state of Oregon that says you can't racially profile. Unfortunately, the language that was used in the bill is a very narrow definition of racial profiling, and a definition that we actually had removed from the Portland definition in the mid-2000s, replacing it with a U.S. Department of Justice definition that's broader. So the word that are used says that profiling is when you solely stop somebody because of their characteristic, such as race or gender. But problem is that if that's not the sole reason, if it was one of the reasons, it's still inappropriate. So we think that it would be great to see the law tweaked a little bit to be more specific so that it's not just, oh, you only stop this person because they were black, because that's incredibly hard to prove.
That was Dan Handelman of Portland Cop Watch. So of the 23 states that have some sort of ban on racial profiling, more than half of them only ban profiling if it's the sole reason of the stop or search. In addition to having a pretty vague definition of profiling, Amnesty's report says that racial profiling laws have to ban pretextual stops, something that House Bill 2002 doesn't mention. Pretextual stops are those times when police use minor violations like traffic stops to inquire about other things like guns or drugs. And so many people who are confronted with these situations don't even know that they have the right to walk away or not answer. So they unknowingly consent to a search that can lead to them being arrested, or worse. Right now, only two states ban these kinds of stops. Another thing the NAACP points out is that a group independent from law enforcement needs to be responding to complaints. Unfortunately, this is a huge missing piece in House Bill 2002. In the city of Portland, we have a thing called the Independent Police Review, which is a division of the Auditor's Office. The IPR is supposed to be an independent, impartial office that oversees the Portland Police Bureau. Right now, they take complaints from the public about racial profiling, but only about 15% of those complaints are actually investigated. And the ones that they do decide to investigate are just sent back to the police bureau.
In the 13 years since that group got started, there's only been one case of what they call disparate treatment that got proven out of policy. And part of that is because to prove an officer racially profiled somebody, basically they have to say the N-word. It's very rare that you have enough evidence to prove that the officer was showing racial bias.
That was Dan from Portland Cop Watch again. This shuffling of complaints among law agencies just perpetuates a system where police are expected to hold themselves accountable, which, as we've seen over and over again, just doesn't work. So what's going to change about the complaint process in Portland now that this bill is in place? Not much, honestly. But for the rest of Oregon, this is a pretty big step. For Portlanders, complaints can now be made directly to the law enforcement agency, as well as to the Independent Police Review and a new committee called the Law Enforcement Contacts Policy and Data Review Committee. But those complaints are still going to be investigated by the police themselves. One upside is the Law Enforcement Profiling Work Group, which is another new group set up by House Bill 2002. Their job is going to be to monitor patterns in the complaints against police, as well as write up a report on the patterns found and the ways they've identified to fix them. After learning all of this and realizing how much work still needs to be done, I wanted to figure out more avenues for action. And I found that this isn't all the city of Portland has been doing to combat racial profiling and improve police accountability. In fact, there have been programs and committees in place for years. And that's what brought me to the Community and Police Relations Committee meeting.
The two objectives, or the two goals, I guess, of the CPRC, the Community and Police Relations Committee, are to deal with racial profiling statistics and trying to figure out why they continue to be so high and black and brown people are disparately targeted and stopped, and lower those numbers. The other thing also is to create better relationships between the community and the police. And I think by building better relationships with the community and police, we will get to that place of lowering the stop.
That was Sam Sachs, who's a human rights commissioner and the chair of the Community and Police Relations Committee. I wasn't nearly expecting how powerful it would be to attend a meeting like this. Human rights commissioners, community members, and members of the Portland Police Bureau all sat around one table brainstorming about how to create trust and better relationships between police and the community. Here are some clips from the meeting, but just a warning, the sound gets pretty wonky in that room.
Issue that we have been bringing up is to have a standalone training on respect and fairness. And so I don't know if we have a goal, or if that might be something this committee would want to try to set, like, well, we'd like to see by, you know, 2020, X amount of officers of color.
That was Marcia Suttenberg, who's another human rights commissioner on the committee. The most powerful part of all this for me was the transparency within the police department, especially in regards to issues community members and commissioners brought up.
You know, we keep talking about community engagement. It's important. I think what we fail sometimes is in the customer service piece of it. When I approach somebody, okay, I'm trying to have my officer safety skills, but am I realizing the bigger picture? How am I coming across? I got my sunglasses on, my arms crossed. How is that being perceived? And I think that sometimes is where we fall down. We don't stress that enough. And that's where I see where we fail sometimes as an agency. We don't do a good job of explaining ourselves or stressing that. But to have something like that be really important culturally, I think that's what we're really fighting. I think it's at the point that when we are having those contacts, even though they're predominantly extremely positive, we need to polish up so instead of hitting 80%, we got to hit 99% in how we're perceived amongst the contacts.
I'm not sure that the police have always done a good job of taking a self-awareness or evaluation of the role that they've played in bringing us to this place that we're at. I think the Portland police here are doing that now. And I think they recognize the need to build better relationships. So it is powerful to be in this room when you hear police officers talk with community members and have honest, open conversations about finding solutions. I think a lot of times we get stuck in the problem. Like what we're trying to do here is, okay, what's the solution? You're a police officer. You have the authority to arrest me and detain me. I'm a person of color. I don't feel safe. I don't trust you as a police officer, but I understand you have to do your job. How do we get to that place where we can relate to each other on the streets the same way we relate to each other here? I know it has a lot to do with trust and building that trust.
That was Sam again. Before him, you heard Lieutenant Larry Graham, who's one of the five Portland police members that are on the CPRC. All this talk of community engagement and respectful policing made me think of the ways that House Bill 2002 is trying to implement these concepts.
I think that this will begin to change related to how law enforcement is dealing with things. Many folks in law enforcement have struggled with the knowledge that this is a problem, unclear how to deal with it. But now they're going to make it clear that this is something the general public is watching very carefully. We still have a lot more to do to regain some of the credibility that we've seen lost over the last few years related to law enforcement relations with marginal groups. But I think this is at least one piece of that puzzle, and I'm pleased with that.
That was Lou Frederick. House Bill 2002 is also focused on reestablishing trust, but some people claim that this so-called trustful relationship has never even existed.
I keep hearing all the time, we're going to be building trust, but today I heard somebody say, well, since there's never been trust, we don't know how we're going to improve trust, we're going to have to start from scratch.
To put all of this in a bit more perspective, let's look at what's actually happening with police relations in Portland.
Of the gallant South.
The Portland Police Bureau is always keeping track and releasing data about the race of the people they stop, how many of those people are searched, and how many of those searches actually turn up contraband. In 2010, they found that black drivers and pedestrians were stopped at over twice the rate of their representation in the population. This means that for every 5 black Portlanders, 10 are being stopped by the police. Although officers probably don't know the race of a driver when they decide to stop them, institutionalized racism and the officers' own biases cause them to search people of color more often. Black Portlanders stopped by the police are searched at over twice the rate of white people who are stopped for the same reasons. This gets even more ridiculous when you see that only a quarter of black people who are searched actually turn up contraband, whereas 36% of white people searched are found with contraband. So there really is no basis for the disproportionately high rate of stops and searches that people of color in Portland have to deal with. It's also important to remember that this is only stops data. The CPRC has been working on pushing the Portland police towards collecting what they call mere conversation data. In other words, officers would have to start recording the interactions they have with people, even if the person isn't being stopped for a specific reason. This is a really important step to highlighting the implicit and explicit biases that officers have.
I think police officers have to recognize that they are ultimately responsible for that change. And what are they doing on a day-to-day basis that they can do differently? Are they aware of their own bias, right? And if they are they acting on it, not acting on it? It's a conscious thing that you have to change the way you do things. And you have to change the culture of the police department.
That was Sam from the CPRC again. By the way, the CPRC is currently looking for new members, so if you're interested in taking action and making a real tangible change in relationships between police and the community, you can find an application on the CPRC webpage at portlandoregon.gov. So, the accountability of officers is a movement that is spread across the country. But why is this so important in Portland? Why is this conversation so vital to such a predominantly white and, quote, progressive community? Portland's whitewashed history is exactly what makes these discussions so necessary.
You know, Portland, unfortunately, we're in one of the whitest states in the country and one of the whitest cities in the country, and we have a very bad history in this state of institutionalized racism, where people of color weren't even allowed to move or own land here for a long time. But you know, overcoming that kind of history in Portland is crucial, and especially now with gentrification doing what it's doing and pushing out the traditionally black community. With all those things going on, making sure that the police aren't paying over attention to especially African Americans is really important. And I think that conversation has shifted a lot since the death of Michael Brown. And for us, it's fantastic to have not only more people working on the issue of police accountability, but people who are directly affected in the daily lives organizing around the issue. We want to empower the communities where the issues are happening to do organizing. And I think that in the wake of Michael Brown's death, that empowerment has taken on a life of its own, and it's very exciting.
Obviously, across the country, we have seen some real issues regarding racial profiling. We have now presidential candidates finding that they need to address it directly with the Black Lives Matter component of it.
That was Lou Frederick, who's the chief sponsor of House Bill 2002, and Dan from Portland Cop Watch.
It's really important work, and, you know, having been a corrections deputy and worked in law enforcement and public safety most of my life, and also being a racial justice activist, for me it's important that we continue to do this work to bring people together. Mm-hmm. And I think and I believe that we